Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. So last week we had the first edition of Women Talk in about 9 and a bit years. And now we are bringing back Men Talk. I'm very excited to welcome into the studio Johnny Gates, well, Pat Kelly and Grant Joel. Hello.
Hiya, Hannah.
Nice to see you all. And this isn't a new thing for you, Johnny. We used to do Men Talk quite a lot, didn't we?
We did.
Yes.
Much to the chagrin of most of the Costa del Sol.
Exactly. Are you still a man, Johnny? Yes.
I'm now what's known as an older man.
Ah. Older man.
I'm 60 now.
You're not.
I am. I got 60 in July and now I'm allowed to be grumpy.
Okay.
Before I wasn't.
Yeah, so now you've got an excuse.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
Fair enough.
You're in good company then,
Johnny. One foot in the grave and all that.
No, don't. If listeners would like to get involved, if you want to comment on anything that we're talking about, you're more than welcome. You can give us a call on 952 78 4000. The first article I've got here was talking about CDs. Barbara Streisand, apparently, even though she has a fortune of £300 million, you'd expect maybe for her to have a fleet of luxury cars, but not so. She drives a battered old vehicle given to her by her son because it still has a CD player.
Tidy.
Anyone got a CD player in their car?
Yeah, I still have a CD.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
A CD player, yeah. No, not a CD player.
Not a CD player.
Sorry.
No.
I think I do too, unless it's a toaster or something. I've never put a CD in it, but I think there is one there. There's a slot.
Yeah, in the car.
It would
still be a CD player, yeah.
Okay,
but you don't use it. One. Not in Spain, no. I don't possess a CD.
But you don't have any CDs in Spain?
None whatsoever.
Interesting.
Are they illegal?
I don't have a car.
You don't have a car? Okay, going well. But I bet you've got a CD collection at home.
Somewhere, there's boxes and boxes of CDs, albums, cassettes.
Have you got cassettes as well?
8 tracks.
Vinyl?
I've got vinyls. I've got a whole host of vinyls going right the way back to 1971.
Wow.
My wife nearly chucked them out when we were moving from the UK. But I just managed to rescue a disaster.
Good year, 71.
Does anybody have a car that plays vinyls? That would be impressive,
well,
wouldn't it?
Wouldn't that be impressive?
It'd
be a big car.
Yes, I think I have seen it many years ago, and it's on a gimbal.
What's a gimbal?
A gimbal is a thing like you have at sea, where you have a cooker on a thing. It keeps it level.
Oh.
So you can put your discs on, and as you go around the corner, the record deck stays level. It's called a gimbal. It's your word of the week, Anna.
Thank you, word of the week.
I thought a gimbal was somebody who put a mask on and they stood in the corner while the terrible totally things
different.
Went on.
Totally different. So have you got cassettes at home, Pat, as well?
No, I don't. No, I was really happy to get rid of cassettes. I thought they were always a terrible medium.
Yeah.
So vinyl, great. CDs, great. Still got them.
Yeah.
Certainly got the vinyl, but cassettes, as soon as there was something to replace them, they were gone.
Did you throw your pencils away at the same time?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The spoolers. Yeah. They were known as the spoolers. Yeah.
Spoolers. And what about videos? VCRs.
Got a cupboard full of them.
Have you really?
Yeah.
But have you still got a video player to watch them?
In another cupboard.
Really?
Along with the CD player.
Must have
lots
of
player.
Cupboards.
You've got a lot of cupboards.
Yeah.
I've kept everything.
Really? I really enjoy decluttering. But the thing you can do is you can put them onto other forms. So I got lots of videos from things that I wanted
to keep. Like MP3 and stuff, yeah?
Yeah, or even onto a CD, DVD or whatever. Yeah,
so it takes up
less room.
We thought we were really cutting edge when we got one of the first DVD recorders.
Right.
Yeah. Cost a bloody fortune, this piece of kit. And it was there where you just sort of program the TV to say, right, you're going to record this program from then till then. And it cost, do you know what, it cost about 900 quid, and this is about 20 years ago. And it was obsolete before we even got it. I mean, it was my version of Betamax.
That's why I've kept everything, it might come back.
Yeah?
Just in case.
Never know.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Come the revolution, Johnny.
Come the revolution, once the internet goes down, you'll be going, where's that DVD player?
Yeah, absolutely.
When your Netflix isn't working.
Well, talking of all of that, there was an article about boredom.
Oh.
Apparently, there is has been a boom in boredom studies because people have been spending a lot more time at home. People have decided to study how people coped with boredom during lockdowns. Apparently, they came up with this novel idea, which I'm sure none of us have ever thought of before, that boredom can lead to creativity or force people to change their lives, but it can also lead to dangerous and destructive behaviour, including alcoholism, drug-taking and aggression. Now, steady on in terms of how much we're going to share here, but did you find during lockdown that you were bored, or did you think, wow, with all this time on my hands, now I can do things that I didn't have time to do before?
Yeah, I built an outdoor kitchen.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, I was very bored, Hannah.
Were you really?
Hated it.
Right.
Absolutely hated it. Couldn't get out, couldn't do exercising, couldn't socialise. No, I found it very...
So what terrible things did it make you do, Grant?
I kind of would sit on the computer and daydream about looking at boats that I will own when I win the lottery and things like that.
Yeah.
Kind of just a bit of a dream thing going on, yeah.
There's plenty you can do. Plenty
I found
you can do
constructive ways to do different exercises. And
it is interesting, though, isn't it? This thing about, you know, if you're bored, it's the perfect breeding ground for creativity.
Mm.
And I've always thought that must be the case. It's never visited me, though. When I'm bored, I'm just bored.
Yeah.
And all of those things you mentioned, the list of the don't do's, I do them with relish when I'm bored. With absolute relish.
Oh,
there are many, many creative ways of opening a bottle of wine.
There are indeed.
Yes, yes. <Okay. laughs>
Including with your teeth.
I know that was a problem. People did start...
Yeah.
Even I, because I have always had a rule, don't drink until the sun's gone. It's like darkness.
Yeah.
And then there are no rules.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
But Johnny, you just need to be international. Data.
Well, that's
the sun's gone somewhere in the world at any time.
I've never lived on that. But in the lockdown, one would go, oh, I'll have a beer now. Because I never drink at 12. But if you can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So I found it the opposite. I would usually play paddle or do something constructive. Then I feel like I've deserved, you know, to have that alcohol. But as a rule of thumb, I very rarely drink at home.
Mm.
Did
you stick to that during lockdown?
Yeah, I didn't drink much at all during lockdown.
Very good.
Yeah,
My wife took to hiding the bottles. But she, you know, that was a great idea, but she didn't really use much of a landscape. So there's only, what, 7 rooms in our house? It was always going to be in one of them.
Exactly.
Until she took the final sanction and then actually put them in her car.
Oh, wow.
She couldn't drive.
Well, she can drive.
No, but she couldn't go anywhere on it.
She couldn't go. Very true.
Exactly.
And not very good if she got stopped by the police with 20 bottles of good red wine.
Well, I did sort of warn her of that, but she seemed to think that she had a higher calling, which is to keep me off the juice.
I think a lot of it depends on where you live. If you live in a 2-bedroom flat,
absolutely.
I can imagine you get proper bored. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I live on a finca, so
I've got a bit of land.
It does make you, though, feel for those people, you know, during the lockdown who were in just a 1 or 2-bedroom flat.
That's me. I'm in a 2-bed apartment and I was bored. I mean, we couldn't even walk around the complex without getting told off.
Yeah, that is too restrictive.
That wouldn't be working for me, I'm afraid.
It's like
the whole work from home thing, isn't it? You know, people are saying, oh, I'd love to work from home. But there are so many people who it's not a luxury to work from home. No. They're in a small flat, they want to get out.
Mm.
Or they're sharing with other people and broadband is being sort of shared out and weakening by every user. You know, people always sort of generalise based on this is what I want and what I feel. And of course, everyone has got a different starting point.
What's broadband?
Yeah. It'll come your way sometime, Johnny.
Yeah.
How old did you say you were? 100 and what?
Up in the hills, we have 2 Heinz baked bean tins and a piece of string.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, funny.
I've got Elon Musk on direct dial with my baked bean tin.
Wonderful.
Musk calling Johnny.
Right, we are moving on to the subject of dating.
Ooh.
Brace yourselves. There was an article here that said women apparently are turned off by men who have a lot of female friends. So if you were looking to start dating and a woman had loads, so I'm turning it around the other way. If you were looking to start dating, I know you're all very happy in your relationships, but if you were dating and your prospective partner had lots of male friends, how would you feel about that? Would that put you off?
It's interesting, isn't it, when you switch it over? Because I know what you're getting at here. There would be this thought that, well, what sort of girl is she? She's got so many male friends. And this, I read this article and I thought, I would have thought women would be quite attracted to a man who has lots of female friends because it shows that he's got a good, you know, ability to enjoy time and, you know, and everything with the female gender. And then it was a real surprise that it was a bit of a turn-off. But then I did what you just asked us to do, did the reverse view and thought, yeah, I can see why it might be seen as being a negative, that it's somebody who's essentially always in the game.
Yeah.
I suppose it's important how they handle that, though, isn't it? I mean, if they've got lots of male friends, there's nothing essentially wrong with that. But, if they're out with them all the time and it actually impacts on your on potentially a relationship in a negative way, then you might find that quite off-putting.
Well, it depends what they're doing with their male
friends. Well, that's what I'm saying. It depends how they handle that. It's just how
and people are different with friends. Some people of the opposite sex, they can be really good friends, but there's often that kind of flirty banter that they have going on, and both of those people know it's just flirty banter and it means absolutely nothing, but a prospective partner could see that and think, oh, they've obviously got a thing for each other, when clearly they may not.
I suppose if there's an insecurity in the relationship, then someone's going to look for the danger signals, aren't they?
They shouldn't start it in the first place. But if the woman, in the woman's case, if all her friends are Chippendales, and for the male as well, if they were all page three girls, then obviously that it might work. But if they're just ordinary folk,
we've just been
transported back to the 80s.
Straight from the 70s, where you've got your first album from.
Talking about friends, there was an article, When Harry Met Pally. Apparently, most couples were friends first. Research has shown that two-thirds of couples get together after being friends first, with 22 months the average length of time before love strikes. So I'm going to ask you all, were you friends with your partner before you got together, Pat?
No, I wasn't, and I haven't been since. I'm thinking, like, even my first wife, there wasn't a sort of friendship that blossomed into a relationship. No, it doesn't. I can see it happens, but it's certainly not happened to me. The friendship has come afterwards.
Yeah, okay. Johnny?
No, never.
No? Really?
Absolutely, no. What do you mean? Do you think I haven't got friends, Hannah?
I'm just surprised you say no, never, as if it's like no, it's never happened.
All
like
my
that.
Girlfriends and wives have all just been strange, total strangers.
Okay.
And some still are.
To each other?
Sadly not. I've got lots to talk about.
What about you, Grant?
Ella and I met on holiday. She was away doing her netball tour, and I was playing golf. We met then. But for most part, no, none of mine have been through friends, full friendships. Yeah. I should say no.
I doubt that article wholeheartedly.
It's fascinating that none of you. I was friends with my husband before we became romantically involved for many years. Yeah, so it's happened to me, and I know lots of people that they've had the same experience.
I can see how it happens. I mean, if you like someone, especially kind of if you're working with people, you get to know them well, they grow on you. You know, you can actually really start to get very fond of people and start to actually see them in a different light when you see them every day.
Yeah. I think that probably doesn't happen in maybe somewhere like this, but where you live in a city where everybody's working in an office, then yes.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to meet people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, certainly if the question was more, or the statistic was more people who have met at work who have then gone on to get married, I would imagine that would be extremely high, because it is, we all, maybe not so much nowadays for some of us, but we spend a lot of time at work, and you get to know people in a very sort of complete way at work, and it's obvious that romances would then spring from that.
Although, interestingly, I'm just thinking I've never been out with anyone who I worked with. I don't think.
You never
But that's because you're always locked in a recording studio away from everybody. I mean, you've been in quarantine well before COVID.
That's true. It's a funny one, though. I'm surprised that none of you have ever had that experience.
No.
Okay.
God forbid.
Moving on. Actually, we'll take a break. We'll be back the other side.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Okay, welcome back to Men Talk. I'm just okaying the next few subjects with my my men in the studio today. We've got Johnny Gates, Pat Kelly and Grant Joel. If you'd like to get in touch with what we're talking about, you're more than welcome to. Don't be shy. You can give us a call on 952 78 4000. So there's a piece here. Is it sexist to say women should age gracefully? I thought this was a particularly interesting article, considering where we are in Marbella on the Costa del Sol. This is just talking about the whole idea of women as they get older, whether you care, whether you have a massive opinion on, whether you appreciate women who, you know, dye their hair, they don't want to be seen to be grey, maybe whether they get work done, whether they're always wearing makeup, the whole idea of trying to look younger than they are, whether you think that's a good thing, a positive thing, or should women just allow themselves to age naturally and not be so worried about those things.
If putting up all the schlep and dyeing their hair makes them feel better about themselves, and absolutely they should crack on. Some women look amazing with grey hair.
Yeah.
On the head.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think good luck to them. Absolutely. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. I'm all for it. I think if they go too far, you know, sometimes people, you see people go too far, they've had a, you know, maybe a bit of cosmetic surgery that hasn't gone well and things, and it looks a little bit false.
Are you talking about the mutton dressed as lamb?
No, I'm just saying sometimes people do go too far, I think, and it's a shame.
That, can be over the top.
Yeah, it's over the top. But just as a general thing, yeah, why not? Look after yourself.
You mean when they die and you have to slam the coffin lid down like that?
I just think it's interesting, isn't it, that this article is about women aging gracefully. What about men aging gracefully or otherwise? Because you know, there can be, when you see a guy who's had loads of work done and he's had his hair dyed and it's not, you know, the Rudolph Giuliani, you know, boot polish look, that's never a very good looking thing. And the thing about aging for me is your aging is about how you feel, it's about who you are inside. And if then your way of being able to bring that out into the open is that you want some cosmetic enhancement to help you feel the young way that you want to feel, go for it. Whether you be a girl or a guy, a woman or a man, go for it. Sometimes it will be a little bit cartoonish and you've got to put up with the fact that some people might snigger and whisper as you walk by. But most people who do that couldn't give a monkeys about what other people think. And as long as it makes you happy and you're not harming anybody, who cares?
Do you think it's easier for women to be able to keep themselves
younger? Yeah, no, because they'd be putting makeup on since they're 14.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're like me, I mean, there's not enough Botox in the world to smooth this face out. Not, you know, a good Rowenta iron wouldn't sort it out. Men, I believe, should grow. I mean, there's not the only person with hair in this studio is you, Hannah. the show should be called The Eggheads.
Exactly. Absolutely right.
To be fair. And bring in the polish.
Humpty Dumpty and fall.
I think men should grow. I mean, there's nothing worse than seeing a man who's banged on the Grecian 2000, if they still make that. It's got that nasty brown boot polishy look to it, and it's really.
It's funny, isn't it? Because if they've kind of always done that, then for the most part, you wouldn't necessarily know. You know, if as soon as, like with some women as well, as soon as a little bit of grey comes, they're covering it up and you wouldn't know whether they're going grey or not. But if a man was grey and then suddenly was jet black, it would be a bit...
It becomes of a shock.
Well, I've got an admission to make. I went grey pretty early in life, and so I decided I'll try this stuff. And I'll never forget this. I lived on this estate in Twickenham where everyone could sort of see each other. But a neighbour of mine from, like, upper storey window, must have been at least 200 yards away, went, "Hey, Pat, you've dyed your hair."
Oh,
never
yes!
done it again. Never, ever done it again.
Oh, God.
So most, not that there's most, anything to do now.
Most women colour or tint their hair all the way through their lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it's just...
Standard course.
Even from when they're, like, 15, it goes right through. And obviously, when they start seeing grey hair, they're not going to start... It's OK, but I went grey overnight. The day I got married to my first wife, and I had proper dark brown hair, really dark brown hair, and then I woke up in the morning, and I was...
You were so white.
What happened there?
Must have been a hell of a night.
I prefer to call it salt and pepper.
But now
it's more like Philip Schofield white, I'm afraid, which is why I cut it all off.
And what about dress sense? The whole, like, you know, you must have seen... or maybe you haven't seen, I don't know, whether women... Let's talk about women. We can talk about men as well, if you like, but... whether there are certain clothing aspects that maybe women shouldn't wear as they get older, and it's kind of obvious that they're trying to look younger, or whether, again, as you said about the makeup and everything, whether if they feel good about themselves, then it shouldn't really matter.
The only thing I'll say on that subject is that, because I used to work in the fashion industry quite a bit, and whenever I see, because everything comes around in cycles, and when I see the headlines, "The bodycon dress is back again," I think, oh no, because 9 out of 10 wearers are just going to make it
look awful.
You'll have to explain
I'm so
that
sorry.
To me. What's a body con? Is it a con?
It's sort of really tight. Hugging. Oh, so it's like a second skin.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Which, really, really
which
tight.
On a good form is great. But
most... hand on slider, Hannah. Most... an awful lot of women I know... especially from the UK, hand on slider, see, they buy one of these bodycon things because they've seen Kate Moss wear it and they look in the mirror and they immediately think they look like Kate Moss. Mm. The fact that they're 45 stone and the flower pattern has just gone completely distorted. I mean, some people just don't know when, you know, I don't know what mirrors they've got, if they have mirrors.
Yeah. I wonder
some
how...
dreadful choices out there.
Yeah, I wonder whether they have someone in their life who can be totally honest with them. You know, the whole scenario of saying to your partner, does my bum look big in this?
The answer is yes.
So do you and have you felt comfortable to be honest with your partner? And so, would you be honest and say, it's not quite...
Well, you do, when you put a bit, always hand on door handle.
Yes.
Yes, I've gone.
I'd usually say, yeah, I'll just come back to you in a moment, get at least two rooms away, and then give my opinion.
Yeah.
No, you can't lead someone on into some sort of fantasy of what they think they look like, because that's going to come crashing down. But again, it does go both ways, because there are equally men who have no idea of how to dress, particularly as they age and they try and be somebody else, and it can be just as disconcerting as seeing a size 14 woman in a size 6 dress. I mean, we have our own faux pas. I mean, for goodness sake, the Budgie Smuggler swimming trunk, which are thankfully we don't see many of those now. But
no. Only when the Germans come down on
Well, yeah, yeah. Okay. I'll tell you what, Johnny, you are an indiscriminate attacker of all...
To offend, yeah.
I'm loving
it's true.
It.
It's true, though. If you see a big, huge lorry that's been turned into a camper van, you can guarantee it's got a German number plate on it. And if you see budgie smugglers on the beach, they're either Austrian or German.
What about the white socks and sandals?
Nothing wrong with it at all. If you've got corns like I have, Hannah Murray, telling you now, white socks... Well, actually, not white socks. Any socks will do. And I don't have sandals.
Okay, well, that's fine, then. It's the two together that there's an issue.
Well, I think it's for shorts. It's not. Is it the sandals?
It's socks and sandals.
Yeah, socks and sandals. I mean, that's usually the sign of a religious zealot or somebody who really should have been locked away some time ago. Yeah.
I don't think sandals are good.
If you need socks, then wear shoes. Or if it's hot enough to wear sandals, you don't need socks. The two should never meet.
There you go. We've sorted out the fashion.
Well, then put trainers on.
Well, as I'm saying, that's why I don't have any sandals.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, you don't need to mix the two. You agree with me, Grant, don't you?
I absolutely agree with you, Hannah. Yes.
I agree with you, Hannah. I think Johnny's sort of trying to shield a few personal issues.
I think this is something he's
still working through his system.
Well, I am, because I'm constantly being told off by my dear wife that I try and dress like a teenager, which I do.
I think it's important how you deliver the messages if you're giving someone feedback, isn't it? You know, about if they ask you how they look, you know, it's how you deliver that message back.
But some of us can get away with it. Some people can't get away with it.
Grant, I've met Eleanor, and I know if you were just to put one word wrong in that scenario, you would be dead meat.
I get the look, but other than that, it's fine.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree. It's that you can be honest without being rude.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If someone's saying, do I look a bit fat in this, you don't need to say, yeah, you look really fat,
to be honest,
you have to kind of play it down and say, no, don't be silly, of course you don't look fat.
To be fair,
I think the blue is more flattering colour on
the
you.
Girl,
you know.
I really like
the girl already
dress.
Knows the answer. Yeah. The girl already knows the answer to that question when she asks her husband. It's a leading question.
Exactly.
And she should be chastised for asking it. She knows if her bum's big.
Yes.
And she's just spoiling for a fight.
Okay.
In my book. Yeah, no,
Before we approach the subject of in-laws, we better take a break.
Hannah Murray, TRE, in the afternoon.
Okay, we are doing Men Talk. You were listening to Men Talk on TRE in the afternoon. With me in the studio today is Johnny Gates, Pat Kelly and Grant Joel. Good afternoon, chaps.
Good afternoon
Hannah.
So there's an article about in-laws. Apparently, going by the jokes, our in-laws are not always easy to get on with. But it seems that putting in the effort is worth it, as research shows that good rapport with a partner's family holds the key to a lasting relationship. Then it goes on to say that it was deemed to be more important to couples than sex or money, which I find slightly over the top. So anyway, in-laws, any interesting anecdotes. Johnny's shaking his head. Don't get yourselves into trouble, for goodness sake.
My first mother-in-law hated me with a vengeance.
Really?
She, whenever the disdain at which she gazed upon me any time I came into her orbit, I mean, it gave me a complex. She hated me. Oh. Absolutely hated me.
I can't believe anyone could hate you like that.
Grant, I know. I mean, it clearly must be something wrong with her whole mental disposition. My second mother-in-law, this one's interesting because my wife's a good few years younger than me. And the first time I ever met her parents was when we went to her best friend's wedding. And my wife, Monica, comes from Poland. And it was her best friend's wedding. And a bunch of young guys at the wedding decided this English guy looks like we could have some fun with him. And they started telling me how to do Polish toast with vodka. Mm-hmm. But what they were doing when they were calling the toast was taking a tiny sip and then a huge big slug of juice. Not me. I was thinking, I'll show these guys. I was taking the whole thing down.
Yeah.
I was absolutely blathered. Mm-hmm. So much so that my future mother-in-law, who I've only just met, had to take me outside for me to sober up. I then got emotional. I started crying and telling her how much I loved Monica. And and we even, when we went back in, it had turned from daylight to evening, and I was convinced that we'd gone to a completely different place. And I was like, these people look just like the ones that were there earlier.
No.
Anyway, as a result, my mother-in-law has got such a huge soft spot for me, it worked a treat.
Brilliant.
My father-in-law would shoot me on sight, though.
Really?
No, I think you've met him. The guy is not... He just doesn't show his emotions very well.
Okay.
Other than, move in the wrong way and I will kill you.
Okay, interesting.
But my mother-in-law, great. So in-laws for me, because of that, they're in.
Okay, good
It's funny that it's normally... I mean, the jokes, are, you know, you never hear the father-in-law joke.
No.
Because when it comes to the male... The father-in-law is much more likely to like the his new son-in-law. But the mother, you'll never ever be good enough for her daughter.
Mm,
and that's what and
ooh, I think I'm going to be a hard piece of work for my daughter. For anyone who comes courting my daughter, I'm going to be a nightmare.
I didn't have any. I've got two boys, and good luck to them.
Yeah,
but mother-in-laws. Yeah, I mean. My goodness.
Hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I might be controversial. I'm not willing to
fair enough.
Because the outlaw, as I would like to call them, would be terrible. I mean, just...
Yeah.
No, don't get on.
Grant, any interesting experiences?
Not interesting, Hannah, no. No, I wasn't particularly liked by my mother.
I don't think any...
And I can't understand why, not for the life of me.
No.
Do you honestly think that any son-in-law, any mother-in-law likes the person that's taken their daughter away? I don't think you'll find many.
Well, my mum and dad love my husband and they have a really great relationship.
But your mum and dad, and I know them well, are different. I mean, they're not...
Different. I love it.
And so is PJ. So.
But you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know, they're all the mother-in-laws I've had, they've just been, you know, you can't please them.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because if the couple in question are happy and they make each other happy, you would think and assume that the parent should be pleased at that.
I would suggest that mother-in-laws are probably one of the biggest causes of divorce in the West.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely, because they want to get stuck in and they want to boom, boom, boom.
Do you know what, though? I actually think that a lot of this is, it's all grafted by the first ever meeting, and as a potential son-in-law, you're pretty scared of this formidable woman, and you want to make a good impression. And however well or badly it goes down on the first meeting, it sticks with you. Mm. And often I've heard a lot of people, including me, with my first mother-in-law, because, you know, I don't think she did hate me, but I got that impression. And I think sometimes it's just something that grafts on your own mindset, and you're convinced they hate the ground I walk on. And in fact, you ask them and they go, no, he's a great guy. He's been great for my daughter. Mm. Terrific. So sometimes it's about your own self-perception.
Mother-in-law should be seen and not heard.
I think I was actually told by mine.
You were what?
I think I was actually told by mine, no, I just don't like you.
Yeah, no.
Oh,
no.
At least you know where you stand, Grant.
I've
had that.
Yeah. Oh,
I've had that right there.
Yeah.
You. Yeah. You, what are you doing, you know?
But isn't that great, though, Grant? Doesn't that give you licence to misbehave? Because you're never going to disappoint, are you?
It didn't matter to me because I didn't particularly like her either. So we made it quite simple. The only times it was awkward was Christmas and things like that, you know, family events.
I wonder, now this is controversial, I wonder if any of this disdain from the mother-in-law could have come from her son or daughter complaining about their partner to their mother.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely, okay, yeah. Okay, interesting. Without a doubt.
Okay.
It probably comes from their marriage.
Yeah, so it could be coming over from there. Yeah.
Hang on, I'm sticking on what Hannah said here. This is treachery. I'm going to go back and make some inquiries. Because you could be onto something here.
But do you know what I mean? If people are particularly close to their mothers, whether it's a daughter or a son, yeah. if they're going to be confiding yeah. in them, oh, he said this to me, he did this to me, or whatever.
I think it's more sons that do that. Sons who are sort of, you know, apron string to their mum. They do yeah. go back and report because, you know, their wife might be treating them like a grown-up and they want to still be treated like a kid. So they go back to mummy and say, oh, she was really horrible to
me. Telltale tit.
Interesting, yeah. Well, something to think about. I don't want me to getting anybody's partners into trouble, by the way.
No.
There was a piece here that we talked about with the ladies last week, and I kept it because I thought it would be an interesting one to ask the guys. As a study says, women grow more physically confident with age, with 60 being the peak. We ask, what's your best body age? So this is the idea of thinking about your body throughout your lives and now. And is there a particular time where you think you looked your best? And the interesting thing that came out of this article is it wasn't, you'd assume that people would say, oh, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whatever. And it's not necessarily the case, because women particularly were saying that they feel more confident with age. So they might say, without thinking that realistically their body looks better now than it did when they were in their 20s, they might say, you know what, I think my body's best now because they're actually more confident. They have less hang-ups than they did 30 years ago. So I thought it was an interesting one to put to you.
I think I hit my peak at the age of 2. It's been downhill ever since.
Oh no, 2.
No, it's a really good point, isn't it, about when you find that balance between how you feel about how you look and how you actually look. And yeah. In reality, I would say that probably I felt best about my look, about how I look, in my mid-30s to mid-40s. I think that was my golden period.
Okay.
That's when I met my current missus.
So. I think it changes as you age. I mean, when I was younger, I wanted a different look. So I used to go to the gym and I was broader and I had bigger arms and that was the look I wanted to portray at the time. And as I've got older now, I'm actually still quite happy with how I look. However, my body shape has changed and it's more now about keeping fit rather than looking large and muscular. I think you just evolve as people and that changes.
You clearly look after yourself, don't you, Grant? I mean, you're in pretty good shape, aren't you, fella?
Well, thank you very much, Pat. I do. I've always, you know, looked after myself and gone to the gym.
Your bum doesn't look big in those shorts at all.
Yeah. Now, Eleanor told me I look good.
Exactly.
I've never thought about it.
No?
Ever thought. I've hardly ever looked in a mirror.
Okay.
I let people think, you know, it's never bothered me what I look like. If I look like a sack of spuds, I look like a sack of spuds. It's the end of the story. Just really doesn't bother me.
Mm. But that's, I think that's great. That's a
nirvana, that. Yes, I think anybody would wish to be
to
like
have.
That.
Yeah.
Couldn't give a...
Monkeys.
One of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. But you're happy with that. And that's
brilliant.
Yeah,
because there's nothing I
can
do
thing.
About it. And no, I don't go to the gym, nor will I ever go to the gym.
Think about how much time people waste on a daily basis.
Going to the gym.
Thinking about how they look and worrying.
Why care? If you worry about how you look, then you care about what other people think. You should never care what other people think.
No, but it's about your own self-esteem, isn't it?
No.
You know, if you feel good about yourself, I think it's very important
for your self-esteem.
And it can be related to health as
well,
of course.
Well, obviously, if you look like a weeble or something and you're not falling down. No, if your 20 quid jeans from H&M don't fit you anymore, then you've got to look at, you know, maybe dropping a few pounds. But otherwise, you know, why bother?
Yeah,
you are who you are.
I think, though, it is true that if you're feeling pretty good about your physical form, that usually makes you better at most other things in life, because it's all part of that sort of self-confidence thing. Now, Johnny, if it doesn't make any difference to you, congratulations, hats off. But I think for most of us, there is something about it. I mean, I remember I dropped a load of weight. In fact, I got a bit worried. I thought, God, is there something wrong with me? And then I found out it's because I've got this blood disorder that I can manage, but it made me drop 13, 14 kilos. And thank God it did, because I'd gotten overweight. I'm now the perfect weight for my frame. And then I just feel better. I feel feel more mobile, I feel fitter, I feel less of a worry, there's other things to worry about. So I think it does matter. I think it matters to us all. We all have an inner who we are that we have some concerns over.
It's very good for your mental health as well. I mean, you know, it's the first thing anyone would say if they were having help, rather than go and take a load of tablets or whatever, get yourself out. Even if you don't feel like doing it, get yourself out, do a, you know, go for a walk and, you know, get some fresh air. But it's good for your inner being. For
yeah.
Sure.
John's still shaking his head.
Why does it matter? It doesn't matter what you look like, as long as your little legs can carry you to the supermarket and back again.
Well, there's a piece here that moves on nicely from this. It's talking about self-esteem, and to boost your self-esteem, it's essential to identify the negative beliefs you have about yourself. Only then can you challenge them. So this is going to be a fascinating one, because we've got very, very different people, it seems, in the studio here. So self-esteem, the importance of just kind of feeling happy in your own skin. And one of the biggest things that people aren't happy about often is the way that they look. So it's interesting, Johnny, that you don't have that. So I don't want to sound like a therapist here. I've got to be careful how I put this. So if in terms of self-esteem, do you ever have to think about sort of doing things to make yourself feel a bit kind of happier?
No. I knew that was going to be Johnny's answer. So we'll move on.
No, I don't. Why?
But that's amazing. So really, you're pretty much kind of happy all the time.
Of course I am. What's not to be happy about?
Yeah.
If I wake up in the morning, my heart's still pumping.
Yeah.
Okay. And my little legs are working.
Yeah.
Happy days. That's, I mean, there's nothing to worry about. I mean, honestly, what is there?
Yeah.
I think, again, it's different strokes for different folks. Yeah. But, I mean, Hannah, you're in the sort of entertainment business, and you know, you do the acting, and I've done a bit of acting with you, and I've always liked to be a bit of a sort of show performer. And I know, in fact, I definitely know, because I've got it told to me by somebody who does know, that part of that is a certain narcissistic thing in my character. And it's what they're called a vulnerable narcissist. So you just want to be loved. Not a narcissist like someone like Trump.
But we all do.
We do. But some of us, it matters more to us and it affects our behaviours. You know, I like nothing better than to have not to just get it for no reason, but to have done something to earn somebody's praise or somebody's admiration. And that does instill me with much more self-confidence, and I'm happier as a result.
Well, we all love praise, and of course, when you're given praise, that does give you a lot of confidence. But you shouldn't actually need it in the first place.
Oh, I don't agree with that. You shouldn't need it in the first place. I think it's incredibly important for your own self-esteem yourself and to give yourself these...
That should be an inner knowledge that you like yourself.
Well, not everybody has that.
Yeah, most people don't have
that. There was a film. Are we allowed to mention film names?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a film, Notting Hill, and I love a particular clip on that film where Rhys Jones goes out and he's in a very unflattering pair of grey... pants.
Yes,
and he opens the door, he's just got these bright grey pants on, and all the paparazzi are clicking away, and he stands there. You obviously can't see on the radio, but he stands there and does a bit of a pose in front of the... Anyway, so he shuts the door, and there's a big full-length mirror, and he says to himself, "Not bad, not bad, chicks love grey, nice firm buttocks." And he's clenching his buttocks. But you see, that really appeals to me, because I've got a mirror similar to that, and this is true, Hannah.
Have you done the same thing?
I know I do it every day. I'll get up, I look at the mirror, but when I go to bed at night, and when I get up in the morning... I'm not always in grey pants, I have to say.
No.
And I'll stand there and I'll do a bit of a pose like that, and I'll smile to myself and go, "Not bad, not bad. Women love grey."
Grant.
And I go to bed with a smile on my face.
Get yourself a pair of those greying oversized wide fronts, because it really does finish off the look perfectly.
But it's important to be kind to yourself.
Totally agree.
I spend my life in front of people, as you know, Hannah. Being a photographer, I'm always with people. If I worried about...
But you're always behind the camera.
I have to converse with these people all the time. And if I worried about what they thought of me, the whole thing would just collapse in a big heap. I don't
care. So the secret is, get yourself a camera and use that as a barrier between you and what anyone bloody well thinks
of. There's a lot to be said for that. A lot of photographers do. I'm not one of them, because I'm in front of the camera a lot as well. But a lot of photographers do use that as a barrier, because they're socially inept, and they use that as a shield, so they don't have to talk to people.
Yeah. You're not socially inept, though, John.
I'm not socially.
Johnny, I'd like to congratulate you on the quality of your social ineptitude.
One of those things,
does that make you feel good?
Good red wine makes me feel good.
Oh, yes. I'm with you there, man.
Another thing on boosting self-esteem, set small goals. Now, I'm
sex small goals.
No, set, S-E-T. Set small goals. So I sort of think of women when I think of this kind of thing. And so, I'm fascinated to know if you ever sort of in your life kind of think, okay, where do I see myself? Not in 5 years' time, but maybe even next week, you know, smaller goals, you know, what you want to achieve in the next 6 months, where you want to, you know, make some money from, what you want to achieve fitness-wise or health-wise. Do you kind of think about things, you know, in the future, small goals?
Always.
Grant, I bet you
always, yeah, always. I mean, I have a to-do list book. I have a to-do list.
Really?
And I can do things that week or, yeah, but I'll always make it. I even have it in my phone, a to-do list thing, and I kind of just put it at different stages. Yeah, always, yeah. And I'm not saying I stick to it religiously, but it
helps you to write it down and then kind of tick it off.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we should take this in order. So we start with Grant, who's clearly fabulous at it, lives by it. I'm the failed aspirer to setting goals and checking them off and doing them, because I do the to-do list, but very rarely do I get through them.
Okay.
And certainly the older you get, also the time frame comes down. It is like, can I get this, you know, can I still be around after lunch? But so I'm sort of failing at it, and I'm pretty certain what Johnny's going to say next.
Have you ever thought of things like that, Johnny?
No.
There you go.
The only goal I have is to wake up in the morning. Literally. I don't know.
That's amazing.
Never.
It's fascinating.
Why do you write? Why do you write stuff? Write. Just get on and do it. Writing it down, wasting ink and paper.
But okay. So then, are you always? Are there not jobs that you said 6 months ago that you really need to do that you haven't done?
No, because I do them then.
Do you seriously?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I don't want to do a job in 6 months' time. Do it now.
So if there's something you need to do, whether it's in the house or the garden or office work, paperwork, I mean anything, you just do it when it needs to be done.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's impressive. Well, I'm impressed with Grant and your lists, and I'm impressed with you never having to make one.
Don't waste.
And I'm feeling pathetic sat on the end here.
And I'm very spontaneous, so I'll suddenly think of something, I'll just do it.
Okay.
There's no point writing it down. I'll write it in my book later.
I've got one thing in my defence. My to-do lists are never written by me. They're always written by my wife. So it's not really my to-do list, so therefore I'm not really failing.
No. Clever.
And all my to-do lists are really to do with deadlines with magazines and stuff, so I don't have to write them down because somebody's shouting down their phone.
Yeah.
You've done it yet?
Yeah. I'm brilliant. I'm impressed by you all. Let's take a last break.
Hannah Murray. TRE in the afternoon.
Welcome to the last part of Men Talk. With me in the studio is Johnny Gates, Pat Kelly and Grant Joel. There's an article about prenups. They were once the preserve of the rich and famous, but nowadays one in five couples sign a prenuptial agreement before marrying. I thought it would be interesting to look at whether you would have an issue with it either way. If you were asked to sign one because the woman you were marrying was really wealthy, or whether if you were really wealthy and you were marrying someone who wasn't, whether you'd feel it was a necessary thing to put in place.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm a bit old-fashioned here. My view is if a prenup's needed, you've entered the wrong relationship. Because if you're going to get married, that by all of its means is that you two are getting together and you're sharing your life together. And if there has to be some legal document to protect one of them against the other, I just think, well, that just makes a sham of what marriage should be about. I find it extremely distasteful.
Hmm. And you agree, Johnny?
Well, I agree in part. Mm-hmm. Let's say I'm a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
Which I might well be, Hannah.
Mm.
I doubt it. But anyway. and I wasn't married. And then I met a delightful girl from the Balkan States who was 21 who wanted to marry me.
Yeah.
I might consider the fact that she might be after my money and not my well-toned body that mm-hmm. I don't give a damn about.
Yes.
So, yes, maybe
there
so.
There is a place for it.
I think there's a place for it. Yeah. Especially, you know, there's shovel gold and digging to be done. Yeah, absolutely. But in a normal two-up, two-down relationship, I agree with you. I think it's if that's bandied about, then
something's wrong from the off.
Something's wrong from the off. Mm. You should go, you know what? I'll leave it. I'm off to the Balkans.
Pick my own.
I'll pick my own, thank you very much.
Go on, any different?
I think, as you say, a two up, two down relationship, you know, where there's not a lot either way, then yeah. Of course, it's not really necessary, and most people, you know, in my walk of life, probably wouldn't consider it. But that said, I don't have any issues with it at all. If I was to be very lucky and meet a lovely wealthy lady, and she wanted to marry me and wanted to bring up, I wouldn't see that as a disaster and the end of the relationship, and it's never going to work. I'd go, yeah, that's fine by me. I wouldn't have a problem.
I mean, I've never had any money, so if I didn't marry a really wealthy woman, she asked for a prenup, I'd say, yeah, crack on, have a go at it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird one, isn't it? Because I initially agree with you, Pat, that it sort of taints it a bit. It makes you think that, A, you're preparing to split up for a start.
Before you started.
Exactly, which isn't a great start to be talking about
life.
That. But it is life. As we know, it obviously it does happen. And yeah, but then when you said that, Gwan, I sort of agreed. If I met someone who was really, really wealthy and wanted to put it into place, I'd get it. I would get it. But I guess realistically, I probably would feel a little bit offended if I was asked, you know, if they were really wealthy and they said, darling, you know, I hope you don't mind. We need to put this prenup in place. I think it would take me back. Obviously, if I knew that I wasn't with that person for the money, it would be and they appreciated and knew and understood that I wasn't with them for money, but then they brought up the subject of prenup,
they could put it in the marriage, you know, do you take this woman to be your blah blah blah, except for the house.
But it's making the business of marriage a marriage of business. And I think there's plenty to do with contracts in business where, of course, you should absolutely safeguard yourself. But if you're going into a relationship, a marriage, which could produce kids, with a view of I've got to protect myself first, I just think that's very sad. Very, very sad.
Or alternatively, just don't get married.
Absolutely.
There's always that.
There's a big kind of movement that I've been aware of for years, the whole kind of sisterhood movement, and the idea and the importance of women supporting other women, which, as I'm sure we're all aware, doesn't always happen. I wondered if there's that same kind of thing for men. Do men, the whole brotherhood thing, you know, if your mate's going into business or doing something, you know, are you kind of like really supportive of them? Do men kind of really stand up for other men?
I think everybody should stand up for everybody. And I don't think it needn't be put into gender.
But having taken the question in gender, I think men are generally supportive of each other. There's two parts of the macho way, isn't there? One is the individual, which is, you know, the strongest wins, last man standing. But actually, men can be very collegiate and very supportive of each other. I mean, I've watched my eldest son create a business with three other guys, and the support that they have for each other, they would die for each other, and they're friends and they're associates and they're making a huge business, and it's a wonder to behold. And then you've got, I mean, the thing, women do look out for women, because for too long women have had to be under the attack of men, and therefore women look after each other. But equally, women can, there are some women who would drop the sister at any given moment, you know. So therefore, it takes to Johnny's point, this isn't about gender, it's about personality. But I do worry now that because we've gone into the Me Too movement, and, you know, there is a balancing needed, but there's an overbalance. Everything happens with too strong a swing of the pendulum. And you've got this new men's brotherhood now that is like fighting back against Me Too. Don't waste your time, lads. I mean, come on, you've had the upper hand for millennia. So let this pendulum swing and then come back together when we've all arrived at the right place.
Unless you're Boadicea. all my friends are women, so I wouldn't know.
Interesting.
But they are, you know. My friends, 90% of my friends are women.
And this wasn't an issue for your partner, going back to a previous subject?
No. Some of my ex-girlfriends, maybe. But not the fact that all my friends are women. And they are all women.
Yeah. But it's good. It shows your, as Pat said, comfortable. Exactly. Feminine side, you know, good with female company and all that kind of thing.
I much prefer female company.
Yeah.
And hugely successful in the Balkans, I hear.
Yes. I do prefer women's company.
Yeah.
I think women are smarter than men.
Okay.
Bosh.
I'm not going to argue.
I'm with you on that one.
No, I think they are.
Wow. This is good.
Let's get our coats.
Yeah.
I think they are.
Grant, do you have a view on the whole brotherhood thing and supporting each other?
I think it's a very nice thing to think that that goes on. I mean, I think I'm supportive of you know, my friends, absolutely, if and when I can be, you know, and it's appropriate. But you know, I don't think it goes on all the time. It's just, it's a nice thought. Mm. It depends on the individual.
I don't need to have a hood of any sorts, really.
Yeah, no, it's, you know? It's just...
But it,
yeah.
It is interesting. Like, I'm married again, got two younger kids, and my son, Oliver, who's 14, him and his friends are building this crust of boyhood that is against girlhood. And it's quite worrying. And it is a defending thing. They think that girls always get favoured at school. They think that all the chips have been stacked against them. And it does concern me. Mm. And I wish to keep quite an eye on it, because it could become... I mean, you hear about this incel movement, you know. These, like the guy, that idiot that... No, more, worse than an idiot, that killed, what, 5-6 people in Plymouth just a few weeks back. Mm. And he's part of this incel thing. These boys who have no success with girls and therefore just hate them. And turn into terrible misogynistic.
Oh, is that what incel?
That's what it is, unfortunately.
I have no idea what incel meant. I thought it was some kind of terrorist organisation.
Well, but actually, it's turning into one.
Well, yeah, it is, yeah. Mm. So, what's the opposite of an incel then?
An outcel.
Duracell.
I must be me then.
We've got just under a couple of minutes left. We will end with this, talking about going out for dinner. David Walliams, the comedian, claims that the British are a dishevelled nation. He said, "I just wish people dressed up a bit more when you go out to restaurants. That's why I like Italy, where people are very well dressed. You're in Rome on a Sunday morning, you see families parading around all dressed up really nicely." We see that here, don't we?
It's very true. The British, and here, forget that phone ringing. The British are the worst dressed people on the planet.
Well, wait a minute. What about the Americans? Come on.
No. They just don't fit their clothes. When I've been working in Milan,
yeah.
I'm telling you, even the road sweepers are wearing Versace.
Right.
It is phenomenal to walk down the street. Everybody is smart. I'm not saying everybody should wear Versace, but the British in particular, when they get off the plane at Malaga, you just know where they're from because they're appallingly dressed.
Mm.
And they are.
It's true, you can tell. Not all the time, but some of the time.
Well, I mean, it's pretty 70-80% of the time they are, especially when British people go on a plane. Mm. They seem to...
They can't
get a plane without a football shirt.
I think it's changed quite a bit, because, in fact, I think it's gone the other way. I think too many British people, young British people, are overdressing all of the time, and they look inappropriate when they get off that plane, and they look like they're going to a nightclub.
Well, that's because they're from Essex.
I also think there's...
Is there anyone left that he hasn't dissed?
There's a few more. We have less than 30 seconds left, so I'm going to say thank you to Johnny Gates. Thank you, Johnny.
My pleasure.
Thank you to Pat Kelly. Thank you, Pat.
My pleasure, Hannah. Thank you for inviting us on.
And thanks to Grant Joel. Thank you, Grant.
Thank you, Hannah. Thanks for the invitation.
So well done all for the first Men Talk. I was going to say Women Talk will be next week, but it won't. I'm standing in for Selena for a couple of weeks, so there'll be a bit of a break between Men Talk and Women Talk.
We could have come up in drag then, couldn't we?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's still time.
Online, on
have
mobile,
a good weekend.
On the TRE app, your smart speaker, and on air. This is TRE. Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.